Hey, I'm Jack Paul.
Yo, 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 it's your boy Travis J.
It's Darren Isaacs.
Hey, this is DJ Hannibal in the mix.
Hey, Soul Nation, this is IFBB Pro, Neil Hamilton.
This is Kadar Clark.
Hey, what's up, you guys? This is your boy Nate from Nate Bates.
What's up, beautiful people? It's your boy Stack.
Family, how you doing? It's your boy Todd Marshall, your next generation leader and your musical entrepreneur.
This is Addis Hyland, founder of the Bahamian Icon Awards, and you're listening to
It's Your Time to Soar.
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 You're tuned into It's Your Time to Soar.
It's your time to soar.
It's your time to soar.
With my brother, Felici Ranger.
Hello and welcome to It's Your Time to Soar. If this is your first time tuning in, know that we inspire, motivate, and impact. Welcome back, Soar Nation. And on today's episode, we're going to talk about soaring and passion about the aviation industry. All right, now I have a gentleman with me today, Soar Nation. He is a 25-year-old CEO of a thriving private aviation charter company, Aaron Hinsey. But I'm gonna let him tell his story, and he's gonna give us a brief bio about himself. Aaron, what's going on, buddy?
Boy, right here, man. How's it going?
All is well.
How's everyone today? I hope everyone is good. But yeah, man, like I said, you know, it's aviation. Sometimes I wonder if the headache is sometimes, it makes you wonder sometimes. It's a dangerous drug. It's a passion.
Right.
But it's something that I've been doing for years, and that's all that I know. At 25, I've been flying now since I was 13.
Wow. Wow. So what actually made you want to be in the aviation business? What actually made you want to go to flight school? Hey, that's what I want to do.
I get that question so much, and the best answer I could find for that is I tell people my dad, his business, his first company, it involved him to do a lot of traveling. And he had contracts for dialings to, especially for like emergency response type of situation. We had a electrical company, and it involved generator works and stuff like that. Most of our contracts were with Telco. And so, you know, if there's a power outage and the generator doesn't start in time or so, you gotta get on there to get down there quick and, you know, get the thing fired back up. So in a sense of urgency, the best form of transportation he would charter a private plane.
Right.
And I found myself, or my brothers and I should say, found ourselves a lot of times going behind him on these trips, and I always was the one that I just wanted to sit in the front.
Right.
In the co-pilot seat. And I guess from the exposure from that, the interest and then the passion kind of grew from there.
Right.
And I remember around about 11 or 12, I definitely kind of had it in my mind that, hey, I don't want to be a NASCAR driver anymore, because I said, you know, people don't know that, but at some point I wanted to be a NASCAR driver.
Right.
I don't want to be a NASCAR driver anymore. I think I want to be a pilot. And for my 13th birthday, my dad actually arranged a whole flight for me to go up on. And the crazy part is the aircraft that he chartered was a Navajo, which is the first airplane that I ever bought was a Navajo.
Right.
And he had a charter on it, and he arranged it with one of his good friends.
Right.
And that was my first flight. He took off out of Abaco, Marsh Harbor, and he'd say, hey, hold the controls, feel it for a sec. That was it. That was it, man. I listen, I'm sold. I'm done, I'm sold. And I go on back to my dad, hey, how do we get more on this? And if I can recall, I think it was that same friend suggested to him about the flight simulator and all that stuff, and I had the works with it. I had everything you could think of. Sunday was my flying days at home.
Right.
So I had all of the controls, everything set up at home. Any of my close friends that knows me, that used to actually come at the house,
right,
knows about my sim setup. And I had a big surround sound set up in the bedroom and this thing and that. And Sunday, that room door closed, do not bother me, because I'm doing a flight from here to New York or to up to Hong Kong or something like that. Sometimes I go to bed and I go the thing up and wake up through the night to finish the flight, how long it would be.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's where it all began. It all began at about 13, and I immediately got enrolled into a local flight school. Yeah, Frederick McPhee, believe it or not.
Right.
Actually, I started in the same office we're sitting in.
Wow.
All this is history. I started in the same office we're sitting in. Frederick McPhee used to host his ground school here.
Mm.
And I used to come out on the weekend. So, in high school, you know, I'm in class for the week at school, and then on the weekends, I'm still in class again.
Right.
But, you know, whilst everyone's out and about, I'm learning how to fly on the weekends.
Right.
So I'd come here and do all the ground school and all that stuff, and eventually we came to the point where I actually started the flight training portion of it. And let me think. Definitely, I could tell you, I started the actual training portion of it around 2007, because I have records in my logbook from 2007 when I started actually flying.
Wow.
I soloed at 16, so in high school I was in the 12th grade, and 1 weekend I did a solo flight from here to Andres and came back. I never forgot my mom came up, my dad. But yeah, I was flying from, that's all I could remember. That's all I know.
Wow. All right, so let me ask you a question, because you have a lot of, because you said you started flying from about 16 years of age, right?
13.
From you 13.
13, I was flying.
All right, and you started the sim. You started doing the sim.
I started with the flight simulator. A lot of times, you know, people will call you, whether it be family, friends, or even I have one or two relatives that actually want to fly.
Right.
And they got young kids that wants to come up. He wants to be a pilot, or she wants to be a pilot, because there is a fair bit amount of females that are actually interested in it as well.
Right.
And what could you say to him, or what could you say to her, or suggest to him or her about trying to pursue this career? And I said, well, I could say to you, brace yourself, it is expensive.
Right.
I could say to him or her, just read, get right. as much knowledge and information on it, take in as much as you could, and the best tool that will assist you with it is the flight simulator.
Right.
And I haven't flown on flight simulator now since maybe like 2013 or so.
Right.
But I could tell you, up to the time when I used to fly on it, that was a piece of machine, man. I mean, it was so advanced to the point where what I actually did is I parked up my computer with me to go off to flight school. I didn't take all of the controls and stuff, but I bought a joystick. And during my instrument training, that got me through it, because a lot of the stuff you would study in school, and like I tell people, the thing with flight school is it's not like college in the same way as you have a set price here for your tuition, and you know, like everything you're paying for by the hour. And so the more you know, the less time you need to be in there, you waste in there, or the less you will have to spend.
Right.
And so therefore, like I tell people, if you give yourself the upper hand by taking in the knowledge, or even if, you know, practicing on that simulator.
Right, early on.
Yeah, that saves a lot. So for me, what I do, I would go to class today, and we'll go over what's on the syllabus for the day, and, you know, get through it, and, okay, what are we doing tomorrow? And so when I know what we're doing tomorrow, I'll go home to my apartment in Fort Lauderdale, and I would do a little bit of reading up on it.
Right.
But I'll also go on the actual sim and I'll practice certain stuff, because a lot of the instrument stuff has to do with just what it says it is. It's the instrument.
The
aircraft. So dealing with like the approaches and the holding patterns and all that stuff, I did all that stuff practice at night on the simulator.
Right.
So that when I come to school and I go into the school had its sim itself.
Right.
And going into the sim itself, it cut back a lot of my time. So it made it kind of easier for me. But I mean, don't take it for granted. That's all I could say. It's a really good tool.
Right.
And you know, it is kind of costly, but it's nowhere in comparison of what it would cost you if you know you find yourself lagging along during the whole process.
Right. So yeah. I mean, what I'm actually gathering from what you're saying right now, it's like the days of when I was in high school playing basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the fellas, what they would do, they'd wait till basketball practice to start practicing. Mm-hmm. But what you're saying now is before you reach there, you need to actually be doing some stuff on your own. You need to be disciplined to be doing some stuff on your own.
Right. Well, that's exactly what it is. What I always would tell people, in my experience with flying,
right,
I'm not, I won't sit here, I won't read a book front end and front back. I can't do that. I like to know the basics, the basic understanding of what is this, what is that, how does that work, and then let me go in depth, especially with the emergency stuff, and I just want to really know what's going to kill me.
Right.
All right. That's reality of it. That's me.
Right.
What I like to do, I like to definitely get most of the experience on the hands-on portion of it.
Right.
And so I found that even after flight school, when I, you know, I'm typed on three different aircrafts right now.
Right.
All
right.
And each of the training I did on those airplanes on the initial stage of it, I would take the time to, during times when I'm not in the sim, or what I would call the hot seat, when you're in there with an instructor and they're telling you this and giving you the drills and all that scenario, I take time from there when I'm not in there and actually do what we call chair flying. Where I could sit and I'm sitting here in a chair and I'm really just trying to mentally go through everything how it should be done.
Right.
And, you know, the flows and procedures. And if I have an engine fire, if I have engine failure or pressurization issue or this kind of that, or this thing of that sort, I sit and I strategize that in my head. What is the procedure to get through it? And then it helps me along during the next session. Now, what I've also took advantage of is I would speak to some instructors and they'll allow it. And in most cases, they've allowed it with me with the trainings I've done. And when the sim is not active, they'll actually let you go in there and sit in it. You just can't take it off of motion.
Right.
And so, although I have class at, 9 to 5, I would either make up my mind, I'll come in at 7:30 in the morning,
right,
spend an hour in that thing,
right,
without no pressure,
right,
and going through my drills and stuff, and then go in there from 9 to 5 and actually be in there with an instructor, take on that pressure and then go home.
Right.
Or I'll spend the day going through it, get beat up in the sim all day, and then at the end of the session, I'll go back in it by myself and then where it cools down a little bit more, and then kind of go back over what
all was
just thought, and take all that in. But that's how I master my flying. That's just me. Everyone's different, but I believe in taking out the extra time,
right?
And that's important. You know, even up to now, not then completed the courses and you know, typed or licensed and the equipment's already. As you know, I fly multiple airplanes. So what I find myself doing, especially if I'm on a long flight, you know, I'm doing a 2-3 hour trip.
Right.
In a lot of cases up there isn't too much going on, apart from just the usual ATC chatter. So I find myself, I just pick up the book of one of the airplanes I fly and I just read through it.
Just read over it.
Just kind of refresh yourself as to, if this happens, this is exactly what I'm supposed to do. So you're constantly just keeping your mind up to speed, or I guess up to date, or however you want to word it.
Keeping sharp.
Yeah. Those are my tips or my tricks how I do it.
All right. So now you've already went through flight school. You've already been checked out in three of different types of aircraft.
Checked out is a different word. I'm checked out in about 6 or 7 aircraft.
6 or 7?
Yeah. Wow. I'm typed in 3 aircraft.
Typed. So what's the difference between checked out and typed?
The best way I could compare it. I don't know if this is a good comparison, but think of BTVI and UB. And you know, you go to UB, you go for a degree. And if you go to BTVI, you just pretty much go for a certificate and something like that.
Right.
Now, Chaco is almost like you go to BTVI. You just have a certificate in a certain aircraft or something like that. And typed, you know, you're actually licensed or rated in that airplane. So the type holds a lot more weight than a checkout for most cases. And then and that's really just based off a category of airplane. And that's pretty much in the case of the larger aircrafts require type. The smaller aircrafts, you just do a checkout. I mean, I'm trying to make it as simple as possible with the explanation. The smaller aircrafts, you just do a checkout. I mean, I'm trying to make it as simple as possible with the explanation. The smaller aircrafts, you just do a checkout. It's fairly easy. But a type, you know, you're going through a whole degree process for trying to get yourself certified specifically in that airplane, and it takes a while, you know, depending on the equipment. You know, my last aircraft, I did my last type, it took me, the training for it is a month.
Wow.
Versus a checkout, you can do a checkout in 2 days or a day.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. Okay, so starting your business or wanting to start a charter company, right? Exclusive aviation. Mm-hmm. Was it something you always wanted to do whilst you were in flight school, or did this other passion come up afterwards?
Well, let me give you a little history of me in high school. And in high school, I was executive board member on the student council. One year I was a part of the Business Investors Club. The final year in high school, I was president of that club. I was president of the Young Men's Club. And then outside of that, I was actually named Male Business Student of the Year in 2012.
Wow.
So I guess that's enough to say that business is something that I've always had a thing for.
Right.
You know, that entrepreneur kind of way of thinking.
Right.
I always knew I would have my own charter company. In fact, I remember I have it still written on my dry erase board in the house, where I drew on it the name of the company, which was supposed to be Crowns Airline. But you know, that name, I didn't end up going with that. That's fine.
Yeah.
And you know, that was from back in school time. And now, having graduated, you know, I did COB for a bit. I took a break, especially after the passing of my mom. And I found myself I haven't returned back as yet. People say they don't think I will, but who knows? I left and I took a break to kind of clear my head a bit, and I was on a running spree since, I mean. And so, the out of high school, like I said, I always knew I would have wanted to be in business.
Right.
I incorporated two companies in 2012. Exclusive Aviation was one of it. And with Exclusive, we started, and we were initially just management. And to correct you on that, really and truly, we are technically a management company. We only have a charter department where we brokerage flights for charter.
Okay.
Coincidentally, we have our own aircraft, and it's operated underneath another charter license.
Right.
But you know, with this year, we have some things in perspective, and some stuff. Some things we have some stuff set up for this year that is gonna involve some expansion, and therefore now we're in the process of trying to finish up our own charter certificate. So it's going to be some changes this year with the entire operation.
Right.
But we started off in management, and we would, my first management contract was dealing with the guys down for Little Wilkie.
Right.
And I managed an aircraft and flew it for them for 2.5 or 3 years. And from there, I had some things that kind of threw me off a bit, and I kind of stepped back from it for a bit. And what I guess what I would say what kind of pushed me to get back involved with it was the whole death thing.
Right.
So, you know, I would talk a lot of the thing, a lot of these things I was trying to do, or plans, I want to do this and do that, I would tell it to my mom.
Right.
And knowing that I kind of expressed a lot of my dreams to her, I want to do this, I want to do that, and a lot of it was really with business, and to see that things happen quickly, you know, 1 minute she was here, the next minute she was gone.
Yeah.
And it just put me in a mindset that, wow, maybe I wasted some time, because I talked to her about a lot of this stuff, and you know, really and truly, she isn't even here to see half of it be done, you know. And so anyway, the first year I pretty much was in mourning, and you know, the first 8 months to a year I was in mourning and stuff like that. And after that I say, man, I need to, something gotta give.
Right.
And when I jumped back on this whole train for this thing, that was it, man. In no time I started talking with my dad about getting an airplane.
Right.
You know, we started looking into different aircrafts. He wanted me to look into something a little bit cheaper. He wanted me to look in Aztecs. I said, no, I want something different. I want to be in a different category. And, you know, it was hard trying to sell that to him. And, you know, I eventually sold it to him. And then from there, the funding was in the most difficult part, because I've actually had people that was willing to fund me for a while to say, hey, listen, I see where your head is. I know where you seem so focused and
right,
so passionate. Say, hey, if you want an airplane right now, let me know. I'm ready to invest with you. Like,
right.
And, you know, one of them was my godfather.
Awesome.
And sure enough, sat with him. I told him, hey, the offer's still available. I'm ready. And he said, he gave me a little lecture, you know. And he gave me the lecture on, oh, well, this and that with business. He knew the thing with my mom passing. We had some stuff to deal with the house and stuff. You know, if I sure I don't want to just take the money to go towards the house. No, I want the business.
Right.
And, you know, one or two days worth of conversation with him. The next week he say, come by the office and pick up the check.
Right.
And I had another investor for the next portion of it. And then, you know, thank God for my dad. And it's a done deal. I knew which aircraft I wanted. I was between two at that time, and you know, I sent a crew up to go check out the airplane, and it was a trustworthy crew of people that I would say mentored me throughout my entire aviation career.
Wow.
In the beginning.
Wow.
And one of the biggest mentors, much people don't know, that has so much influence, or had so much influence at a point with my career, was Paul Pyfrom.
Oh, wow.
So Paul had my back from, man, listen, it's unbelievable. And so I know Paul was a naval man, and I said, Paul, listen, you have a lot of experience with this thing. You go up there, you check out their plane. If you tell me the plane good to go, I send the money tomorrow.
Right.
Sure enough, he went up there, he
right.
test flew it, he did this, he did that, and he come back, he say, Aaron, say, I think it's good. It's just this, it's that, and that, I had a re-ray, and he say, he gave me one or two little squawks pieces. Other than that, I think it's a pretty good airplane.
Right.
And from there, I went up to Missouri, and I flew the plane down.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's how the history, that's how that portion of it started, and then from there, we just kind of got ourselves in a groove of charter. Charta Fest. We're going on 3 years in Charta.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been all right.
I believe you.
You know, people look at me and a lot of people will say sometimes, say, boy, that's gray hair on your face. How old you say you is again? I tell people, that's why I said at the beginning of the show is like, you know, sometimes you sit and you think of it as aviation, boy, is something.
Right.
But it's an addiction.
Right.
You know, but beginning was rough, but just like anything in life, you know, if you it won't come easy if it's something that you really want or something that's worthwhile to you.
Right.
It has its challenges and you just have to stick in there. And I thank God, I mean, I feel as though the 3 years we're going into 3 years, and the 3 years has been a pretty good ride. And I'm only excited just to see what's to come in the next 3 years. You see what I'm saying?
And right.
It's very promising. I can say that.
Mm.
Right? And I won't say too much on that. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's something.
So let me ask you a question. In each season of your life,
mm-hmm.
from one season was going from high school to deciding to be a pilot, then from being a pilot to then go into to do aircraft management, and then from aircraft management starting your own charter company. During any one of these seasons, have you ever had anyone try to talk you out of what you wanted to do?
You can always have that now, Ranger, especially when you're young. And then especially young enough. What I always tell people, a man of color. That's just the harsh truth of it. Now, in high school, I had people used to tease me all through high school about my dorkiness with wanting to be a pilot and
right.
singing and dance, because, you know, I would walk around school with a leather binder.
Right.
A folder or something like that, and I used to have all my notes in there. I used to pretty much walk around a briefcase.
Right.
And I had a lanyard, Bahamas Airline Association or something like that lanyard. Anyway, I was to a career fair at some point uh-huh. in high school, and uh-huh. I met Bahamas at a table out there, and
uh-huh.
it was at Kendall Isaac Gym, and it was Captain, he's a captain now for sure, Captain Emil Sanders. He I was at the table, man. I had so much passion there. You had a bunch of different high schools there, and I had so much passion there talking about airplanes, and that's when I was like a real, you know, I kind of calmed down now, but, you know, I was, oh man, I was riddling off and off and off, and I guess they was asking certain questions. I could answer this, I could answer that, and he's like, man, listen to me, I'm so impressed with you. He gave me his lanyard off of his neck, took his ID off of it and everything, and gave me that and said, here, take that. And that meant so much to me. I used to walk around school with that up until I graduate.
Wow.
That's where I'm at now.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But, you know, what flying is, that's just how it is. That was the first step, I mean. Like I said, it's a tease me through high school. I had a half of the tease me through high school. And when I actually came back from flying, when I came back out of high school, I stopped flying. No, sorry. Listen to me. Long day. When I came from out of high school and actually started flying,
right?
I've met actually a handful of those same people that would tease me, and they were like, wow, you actually did it. I could never forget. I just told someone this the other day. You know, as you know, right now, you know, I fly, not only I fly my airplane, but I fly a private jet as well for, you know, a group of guys. And I just was telling someone the other day, when I was wrapping up my training,
right,
I was coming home for a weekend. I stayed with one of my closest friends. Again, a lot of people may not even realize that, but one of my closest friends drove my, especially if I didn't learn how to fly and all that stuff, was a good friend of mine's, Brandon Burrows.
All right, so yes, sorry about that. But you were mentioning how you end up seeing persons who thought that back in school you weren't going to be able to do what you said that you weren't able to accomplish what you said back in high school, and now they see that you're walking in it, they're amazed.
And that's how it is. That was just one thing. And when, like I say, true, during when I look back at the actual flying, you know, the training, got through the training and all that stuff, and at some point I recall, like I said, you know, I do corporate flying now.
Right.
A lot of corporate flying. So it has me out of the country for the most part. And I could recall one particular time I was coming home for the weekend, and like I say, during my time in flight school,
right.
A good friend Brandon Burrows and I, we grew pretty close in flight school. And his family was so good to me that when I was off the training, my father, he had an apartment for me. And Brandon knows, or Alan and his wife, Mr. Burrows, they have an apartment over there. They have a condo over there in Fort Lauderdale. So Brandon was staying at the condo. And, you know, we would hang so much that Brandon, one day he's like, "Hey man, listen, why are you paying rent, man? You might as well just come over with me." And I said, "Man, you know, I don't like to, you know, mix up like that." And I said, "Man, I good, man. You know, my stuff could listen. My dad is a person, he's paid for stuff like, oh, I he paid 3 months on my rent, or he, that's how you go." It's like, "Man, I good, you know, it, you know, no thing with that." And then when you started looking at it, I was hanging by him so much, a lot of time you'll overnight there.
Right.
He keep forcing. I say, "All right, fine." And just once it's okay with your parents. And it was like, "Yeah, man." If anything, they kind of was glad that someone was there with him.
Right.
And so they are, as you know, they have their own airplane as well. You know, they have, that's Tropics Air, and they have their flights back and forth to Fort Lauderdale.
Right.
Throughout the week. So it was nothing to get home. You just jump on the plane and, you know, with Mr. Burrows, and that's it. And one weekend I was coming home, and I remember bucking into another local pilot there. And so the pilot made mention to me at some point. He's like, "Oh, so," he introduced himself. I knew of him, I've seen him, I've heard of him. And so, you know, he's like, so he introduces him, I say, "Hey, what's happening?" And he say, "Hey, man," say, "so what's your plans when you get back? You gonna go apply to Bahamas Air or something?" I say, "No, I really don't have no interest in Bahamas Air." I said, "You know, personally, I have a thing for corporate flying. I'm open to get into corporate."
Mm-hmm.
This was from then.
From then, wow.
You know what the man told me?
What did he say?
"No offense, but as a young black man, I don't think you'll ever see corporate."
Wow.
He's a Congi Joe too, so no offense, but he's what they would call a Congi Joe. And you know, but I gotta tell you, you know, people will try to tell you otherwise, and you know, you just have to stay focused. You know what you want. A lot of time people can see the same way you can see out of your own glasses, you see.
Right.
You know, when you go to the eye doctor and you go up there for a prescription for a set eye, for a set of lens for your glasses.
Right.
That's made for you, right?
Right.
So in a lot of cases, if someone else puts your same eyeglasses on their face,
wow,
the vision on the next end of that glasses won't be to them as clear as it is with you, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, that's your vision. That's your pair of glasses. That's for you. That's made specially for you. That's how God have it in place for you.
Right.
So you can't let people, you know, kind of try to shuffle it. And that's what people try to do. They'll try to smack talk and, you know, this thing and an act. You know, you stay focused on what you want.
Right.
Do, like I always tell people, do what makes you happy.
Exactly.
You know, that's working for you. If you think, if, you know, that's how you feel, oh, well, you know, I want to get into doing this or doing that. You know, if you don't want to try.
Right. Awesome.
You know, try it.
Right.
Don't be in a position where you you know, years or years go by, and then you sit back and then you say, boy, I remember he was really interested in this, interested in that. And when you really sit and think about it,
right,
you can't even say how it would have possibly even been, because you didn't even bother to try.
Exactly.
So, you know, don't give up on, you just can't give up. You got to try to just stay focused on what you want and try to go after it.
Yeah, you know, on an episode back, you know, I always tell persons that you should always value the opinion you have of yourself over the opinions of others, because those things are going to change from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Some days you have a set of people with you, some days they aren't with you.
Oh, yeah.
But once you say laser focus, and something I always say, follow one course until successful. You know, you're not looking left, you're not looking right, you're keeping your eyes on the plow. Mm-hmm. All right? So, heading into the next section of our interview. We always talk about soaring, right? Because mm-hmm. you know, our tagline and the name of our podcast is "It's Your Time to Soar,"
mm-hmm.
and we always make mention, or I made mention a few times, about not being able to soar if you go over your maximum takeoff weight. Can you just elaborate on that for me, please?
Well, you gotta understand the whole. The whole idea and concept of what your max takeoff weight is. What essentially what your max takeoff weight is a number that the authorities or the manufacturer came up with based on testing of what's the limit or what's the most that this airplane can take.
Right.
You know, and I always tell people, you know, with your mass takeoff weight is, it's a funny thing, because trust me, you could find yourself in situations where you may get a few pounds over it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You might get off the ground and it's fine until, you know, something happens or the contrary, like, you know, you lose an engine or something. Then now, guess what? That's when everything goes all haywire with it. But the whole idea with your mass takeoff weight is it...
Right.
Is it's a performance limitation, you know, with aircrafts. You know, it's there for a reason. So if you know, if you have a max takeoff weight, you also have what we call a max altitude, or how high
right.
you can actually fly with the airplane. All of those things work hand in hand.
Right.
So in your case, where it's your time to soar, you know. You can't soar to the altitude that you would be able to if you have too much weight on the airplane.
Right.
You know, you can't get as high as you would be able to, or what the aircraft would be able to do. You won't get that same performance
right.
if you have on too much weight on it.
If you have on too much weight. All right. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. All right. So I have a few more questions for you as we prepare to close this interview out. If you had an opportunity to go back into time and to tell your 15-year-old or 16-year-old self, what would that nugget be?
If you asked me, it'd be to put more focus into yourself. It may sound selfish, but put more focus into yourself.
Right.
More focus into trying to understand yourself and trying to better yourself.
Right.
You know, you have to say all the time, remind himself, and that's the reality of how life is. You know, like you said, you know, people come and people go, you know, and you spend so much time trying to please others or trying, you know, this or that, you lose a lot of time and you lose a lot of opportunity, you know. So
right.
Like I always tell people, the way you think at 15, you won't think at 18, and the way you think at 21, you won't think the way you think at 18, you won't think at 21.
Right.
What you think at 21, you won't be thinking at 25.
Right.
Or at least you should not be thinking the same way.
Right.
Because your mind is constantly growing.
Right.
You know, you're it's all still a learning process. And so, you know, you could try to, especially within that same bracket there, that 10-year, let's use that 10-year bracket now.
Right.
15 to 25.
Right.
That's such a critical time period you got there to try to put that focus, that necessary focus you need into yourself and trying to master yourself. Just trying to get too distracted.
Right.
I'm not saying you won't get distracted, trying to get too distracted.
Life
today is it could be very distracting, but you know, that my word would be, or my advice to be to my 15-year-old self is, hey, listen, put a little more worry into yourself. And I think I did fairly okay with that coming up, because in the initial stage it was all about airplanes, buddy.
Right.
So I know I wanted to fly an airplane, and I wasn't stopping until I flew one. And you know, I wanted to get into flying a certain equipment. I didn't stop until I got there.
Till you did
it. I at the time I went to Western Air. I was the youngest one there at the time, 18 years old. I was flying on the Saabs. The time I upgraded to captain, I was the youngest captain. I mean, technically, I'm still the youngest captain that's employed there.
Right.
At 24, I was a captain on the Saab. So, and I fly amongst captains, that's the youngest one there. But I mean, the next one off from me was about 28, 29. Maybe 30, but I had goals I set within myself, and you know, I did what I had to do to achieve them, and that's right. How I go. You know, I try to stay focused. You could get a little distracted. My mom put a little distraction on me. You know, that I didn't see that coming.
No,
but I kind of shook myself off. You know, within a year of that,
and
try to bounce back and try to get myself on track. Or get myself on a track, because your tracks could change sometimes.
Right.
But you know, I got myself on a track, and listen to me, I started trying to push myself forward. And it's just like an airplane on takeoff. When you set that power, you can start off slow, you know. But you know, you can accelerate until you get to that speed you need to get. And just as you say, you soar.
Time to soar.
Yeah, that's it right there.
All right, cool. So apps. Do you have any favorite apps? Do you like business wise or personally?
Apps. My favorite app is my Google map, my Gmail app. I mean, sorry, because my emails is my life. I mean, as strange as it sounds, I don't use any crazy apps. I mean, our Facebook page, which isn't that active these days. I used to be crazy on the Facebook manager app or whatever it's called for the business page.
Right.
I was off social media for a while. The only reason I'm actually back on social media is because of the businesses. And so, and this year now we're starting a whole new other company. So it's like, business is the only thing that has me there.
Right.
So Facebook, Instagram, you know, that kind of thing. It's I'm there for business purpose. You know, Snapchat, I had a season of that where I was on that night. I realized it was a waste of time. So I'm still enrolled, I'm pretty sure, but I delete the app.
Right.
But the only app I'm really crazy about is my Gmail app. So I can check my emails.
Right.
My Notepad.
Yeah, definitely need that.
And my reminders.
Your reminders.
Yeah, because I have a million things going on, and I have a ton of reminders on my phone, because it could slip my mind fairly easy. That's why I always tell people, if I tell you this or I tell you that, and I say, well, hey, call me to remind me of this, don't be afraid to call me, because trust you me, if I did not call you, I did not get back to you. Chances are, I forgot.
You forgot.
So, and so I, reminders, emails, reminders, emails, and my memo. They're my popular spots to be. I recently downloaded an app, I think it's through Amazon, to do the Audible app. Nice. And so I try to download now some audiobooks, because like I say, I spend a lot of time in flight.
Right.
You know, the other day I just did a five-hour trip up to Vegas.
Right.
And so you spend 5 hours up there. If I spend an hour of that listening to that audio app, you'd be surprised what I take in.
I know. I can tell you. Trust me. On days when you see me out there watching and I have my headphones in, audiobooks.
Yeah.
Either audiobooks or podcasts. Yeah. That's where I'm at.
Well, I'm learning more on about this kind of stuff. So, like, even with the podcast, I'm hearing a lot more of, you should try podcasts. It's a lot of inspirational stuff on podcasts and stuff like that. And
definitely.
And so, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's something I'll likely end up looking into and getting myself into. But, I don't have no special apps, you know. I'm not a crazy reader, you know. I don't sit down all day and just nerd myself through books.
Right.
But I'm constantly on the go. As anyone who knows me know, I'm always on the go. So for me, I just need to make sure I can check emails.
Right.
emails.
Oh, so we got it. It's all about the emails, baby.
Yeah. So
yeah, man.
That's how it is.
Yeah, man. So for everyone in our listening audience who would like to get in contact with you, or get in contact, or just to see what exclusive aviation is up to. Do you have some resources, whether that's Instagram, Facebook?
Yeah,
where can they reach you?
Our Facebook page, Fly Exclusive BS, so FLY Exclusive EXCLUSVIE BS. That's the Exclusive Aviation Facebook page. That's fairly okay with content right now. And then the Instagram, that's much better than our Instagram page.
But
with so much going that went on last year, we kind of neglected those things. So this year now we have a lot of other things in store. And like you say, for those that want to stay up to date or try to keep up on what we're up to, it's a good way to keep in touch with us. But I would say the social media is the big thing for us. We still get a lot of messages and stuff through social media.
Right.
So with our Facebook page is a big one, and
you
know, we got on Instagram late last year, so sometime later than we did with the Facebook stuff. So now trying to develop that portion of it.
Definitely.
But yeah, that's where we're at. You know, if you call the phone, it's 377-1945. You either hear my voice or someone else on the end.
Yeah, and for a listening audience, that's actually 242 on
area code. Yeah.
Area code. But I'll have all that information in the show notes as well. Mm-hmm. So have you ever thought, this is a side note, have you ever thought about or have you ever done any of the Instagram ads?
Oh, that stuff is perfect. If you ask me, I always tell people, you know, with small businesses and stuff, you know, I found that tool to be so effective.
Yeah, it's very.
And with so little, you need to even to put in for that.
Exactly.
Just take advantage of it.
Exactly. You know, I've seen it, because you can go up. I mean, whatever your budget is, they allow you.
You could take $50 a month.
Right.
I tell you, $50 a month. If you want to really go out, you take $100 for that month.
Right.
And you could promote the hell out of whatever you want to promote on Instagram, and just flood people timeline. And it works pretty good, because for us, when we had special promotions and stuff, we would do it through the Facebook and the Instagram ad.
Right.
So somewhere in there, you kind of combine the two.
Right.
I can't recall right off top, but you know, it can be done. And it has great responses from it. The response from it is really nice.
Yeah,
really,
I believe you. Because from I've been running Instagram ads, some Facebook ads as well, but mostly
Instagram
ads. Mm-hmm. But because the Instagram gives you more reach for your dollar.
Okay.
Instagram gives you more. Facebook, it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
they more, because you know Facebook is a you know they've been doing it a while now.
Yeah.
Although Facebook owns Instagram, the reach is more better on Instagram. Because people haven't seen me in years. I just saw something on Instagram, you know, because everybody's on this.
Okay.
People are not listening to the radio.
No.
People are not looking at ads and newspapers. They're not doing these other things, and those things are still expensive. I remember. Yeah. Have you ever inquired on a radio ad?
Not a radio ad. I did a newspaper ad before, and whew,
expensive.
Expensive, and what in my mind, it wasn't worth a penny of it. Wasn't worth it.
I'm telling you, because you don't get anything out of that. How much people?
I don't even imagine how much for the radio ads.
The radio ads expensive. You, I don't know if you listen to the radio. Like if you hear Poison's ads who are always on the radio, you know how much money they're paying for that a week? Thousands.
Wow.
Thousands a week, and you got to keep in mind it was expensive before before VAT.
Yeah.
So VAT is 12% now, so you can only imagine how much they're paying for it now. It isn't worth it at all. All I need is some Instagram and some Facebook ads, and they'll be, trust me, they'll be all set.
A lot of those are the big boys who I guess good for it, so. Teachers is wrong with it. But for me, I'm all right. But Instagram and Facebook works quite fine with me.
All right, everyone. It was awesome having each and every one of you listen to this podcast today. And listen, if you haven't heard these words before, know that it's your time to soar.
Yes, sir.
I believe I can soar. Thank you for listening to It's Your Time to Soar. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review.